Hello and welcome to ADHD in Isolation, the podcast where we talk all things ADHD. Today I'm joined by a parent mentor from the group and a parent who approached the group because they had a series of issues that they were just really struggling with their kid and they wanted a little bit of support. So welcome Nikki and Claire.
Hi.
Hello. Hi.
Hi. So Claire, I wanted to start with you. You approached the group a little while ago during the lockdown, right? And you were just struggling a little bit. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. I have two sons, one 7, one 4. My 7-year-old was diagnosed with ADHD 2 years ago. And although we had the diagnosis and we have a psychiatrist in place, we were kind of felt like we were left on our own with it quite a bit and didn't really have anyone else to talk to about it. We don't have any friends who have children in a similar position. And we were recommended the group by a colleague of my husband's, but I was a little bit nervous approaching them at first. As I say, we had no sort of benchmark experience to measure it by. I always worry that the challenges my son faces are less than other people's, and I feel like a bit of a fraud sometimes approaching this, but I'm very glad we did get in touch with Lorna, and she introduced me to Nikki, and we've done the sessions virtually, and it's been a massive help to us.
Okay, are you comfortable talking a little bit more specifically about the kind of challenges you were having at home and with your kid?
Yeah, definitely. The first thing, we never thought Thomas had ADHD because he initially didn't really fit the profile exactly. He was always a bit of a mystery to everyone we spoke to, and his symptoms would come and go. So we'd have phases of being really, really good, and then phases where my husband and I just were tearing our hair out, not a clue what to do with him. I used to describe him as like having an alien from another planet. He doesn't process things in the way that anyone else does. You can think you're on the same page with him 1 minute and he is on a completely different page. And he has a lot of sensory issues, so heat and volume are real problems for him at the moment. But it's mainly his processing of the world, I would say. He can be really disdainful and unpleasant a lot of the time. And one of the main things that I've learned on the group that I can attribute this to his ADHD, I used to think this was just a personality issue he had, and the ADHD was more his lack of concentration, which he has displayed right throughout his life. That's a big part of his ADHD, is his inability to concentrate. But his sort of disdainfulness, his unpleasantness, he can seem quite arrogant at times. And I'm always very worried he'll be taken the wrong way because of that. But they were the main issues we were coming up against, because he can be very unpleasant to the whole family. That makes it very difficult.
Do you think, is there perhaps a degree of overcompensation with the arrogance? Because I know that there's a lot of kind of uncertainty, sort of insecurity and things related to ADHD. I'm just relating this back to myself as a kid, and I would be quite disdainful and arrogant in my own way, while, self-loathing at the same time. I wonder if that's a facet or possibly it's simply, there's obviously the developmental delay as well, isn't there, that he's perhaps operating at a couple years younger. What do you think about that?
Definitely. I think anxiety is a massive trigger for his unpleasantness as well. If he's being asked to do more than he's capable of, he'll shut down and become very disdainful, or he can seem arrogant and he thinks he's the most important person in the room. And also, I can do this, when he really can't. And it's probably an anxiety about not being able to do something. We're seeing it more and more. He has a younger brother who's 4, who in certain areas is starting to catch up with him. And that's a huge trigger for him. If he sees that his younger brother is catching up with him, able to do other things that he can't, it's a huge trigger for his sort of the more unpleasant sides of his personality coming out and the ADHD.
I used to be immensely frustrated that my younger sister could tie her shoelaces before me. That was an enormous trigger for me. You know, when you're seven or something, you care about that sort of thing. Yeah. How old is Thomas?
He's seven, and his younger brother's four.
Right, right. And how long has this stuff been going on before you got in touch with the group?
Oh, well, we've known there was something wrong with him since he was very young. He didn't engage with us particularly when he was a lot younger. He was very slow to walk. He basically sat and watched the world go by, and then one day when he was about 18 months, stood up and ran across the room. So it was basically the beginning of his life was like that. While the other children were sort of would play and at playgroup or whatever, he wouldn't join in necessarily. And he played with toys, but in an unusual way. So he would line up trains in lines of about 100. And he didn't know his colours when he was like five, but could name every Thomas the Tank engine by sight. And just unusual. And things would bother him that you wouldn't imagine should bother a child. And I remember he had a phase where he refused to walk on wet ground. So he wouldn't want to get wellies wet.
Right.
Which was very unusual. And I used to be so impatient with him. I just couldn't understand why he wasn't a happy-go-lucky child. He was tormented by these very seemingly meaningless things. And yeah, it's lots of different things. So if you put gloves on him, he would find the most awkward way to try and put the gloves on, or trying to get him dressed. It would be like he was fighting you constantly, but he would say, "Oh, I'm trying to help." And you'd think, "No, you're not." So the way he processed just about everything in his life wasn't as you would expect.
There seems to be... Well, we know that there's quite a lot of crossover between autistic spectrum conditions and ADHD, and a lot of that would probably resonate with a parent of a child with autism, right? Because we know that there's a lot of shared things, and possibly they're accentuated when the children are younger. I mean, things like the play. Can you? What exactly was he doing? He was laying out his toys in a certain way.
I mean, he had hundreds of Thomas the Tank Engines. He was obsessed when he was younger. He loved them. We used to play this game where we would cover the whole engine and just show him a little part, and he could name the engine just by its nose. He would line them up sort of nose to tail, or in big swirls, or they were all over his floor, and you could literally remove one and he'll go, "Where's Percy?" Walk in. He was just, this was his life from about age 2 to 4.5, I would say.
Almost obsessive compulsive, almost to a degree, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he wouldn't get upset that you'd moved it, but he would notice. It was really, that's how he played. And everything in his life was Thomas the Tank Engine. We have since replaced this with dinosaurs.
Excellent.
So we're now borderline obsessed with dinosaurs.
Excellent. So how did it get to the point where you went from perhaps thinking, "Oh, the problems I'm facing aren't severe enough to warrant support," to thinking, "Okay, I'm just going to take the plunge and I'm going to contact the support group"?
I think, and my husband and I kind of go in waves, so we'll ride a good wave where things are going well at school, he's a lot more pleasant, and we can cope with his sort of his anxiety, and then it'll all come crashing down and he can't cope with the world. They're not tantrums that he has, but he'll have screaming fits where he just can't cope with very simple things. Say there's a slight break in routine, he'll have a real screaming fit, and we'll have a little phase of that again. And he'll become more unpleasant, he'll become more disdainful, more arrogant. He also struggles a lot with his schoolwork. Academically, he's very behind, but verbally he's very strong. So he has that contention to deal with in his head, and because he knows and he can express that how behind he is, and I think the frustration in him builds to a point and everything explodes. we'll then ride another good wave. So when I contacted Lorna, I think we were at a pit of of everything falling apart again. We've learned these things come in waves, but we had done an incredible years course when Thomas was three that had really helped us. And one of the main things that helped us was speaking to other parents. And I think it was one of the first things I said to Lorna, it would be so useful to speak to another parent who's in a similar situation, because we just don't know anybody who's dealing with the same sort of challenges. So that was really why I contacted Lorna in the first place.
So Lorna's absolutely brilliant at that sort of thing, isn't she? And she's just really a kind of a community leader almost, I think. That's kind of how I view her. Because she wasn't able to make this, I feel like I should sort of explain where she's coming from with the fizz things. And I think for the family information session, she wanted to allow for peer-to-peer support as much as her own just teaching someone else things. I mean, we know how important it is to learn about things, but really it's difficult to substitute the benefits you have when you speak to another parent, right, who's been through the same thing. Which brings me neatly and elegantly on to Nikki. Hey, Nikki.
Hi.
Hey, so I wanted to ask you why, first of all, what was your journey towards being someone who Lorna would consider as a parent mentor, someone who would support another parent going through a difficult time?
I had a very, very similar story to Claire about how we came to the struggles that we were having with Connor and how I came to speaking to the group. And I, you know, at the beginning, you feel like you're being judged as a parent. You feel as if you're completely on your own. You've got no idea about anybody else that has a child with the same conditions as yourself. And after learning everything that I did at the group, I never wanted another parent to feel the way that we did. I think it's important to speak to other parents, and so you don't feel completely on your own.
Okay. And what about your own sort of family life before the group?
So I have got two children. I've got an 18-year-old and a 12-year-old, and it's my 12-year-old that has got a dual diagnosis. He, from very young, we knew that there was something slightly different than other children his age. He wouldn't quite pick things up the same way as other children. He had lots of sensory issues. He didn't like the touch of certain things. You couldn't trust him to go anywhere, like walk beside you walking along the street. Anything would distract him, he was gone. And when he went into primary school, these differences started to become more and more noticeable, to the point that Connor himself was noticing them. And eventually it was a teacher that suggested to us one day that we contact CAMHS, because they thought there was something else there. I had researched ADHD, but I think ADHD can come with such a stigma that you just think, oh, it's bad parenting and things like that. And it's not until you do the research on it and you realise that it's actually a medical condition, and that makes it kind of easier to understand, and it's then easier to explain to other people why your child behaves the way that he behaves.
Okay. And what about how are your kids doing now?
We have our moments. Connor is just he's in transition now for going into high school. So that's going to be a new one. But being able to understand why he does the things that he does makes it easier for us and for him. And you can put like strategies in place and things to make it easier for him.
What are some of the strategies that you found helpful?
Constantly planning for the next day, the day before, making sure that he's organised, making sure you have everything for him so that you don't change things last minute. Connor's very routine-based. He likes things the same way every single day. So it's making sure that everything's done in a calm way, because if you change your temperament with Connor, he becomes very agitated and he can't cope with the situation. We have loads of different strategies in place. We have strategies in school where they have him sitting beside a certain person in class so that he can ask them questions and he feels comfortable asking them questions because he struggles. He's got dyslexia as well and he struggles a lot with schoolwork and he's quite far behind as well. So it's a case of having kind of strategies for everyday life, strategies for school.
Claire, I'll switch back to you right now, and can you kind of give us a basic overview of what these sessions look like? So they're obviously, because of the lockdown, they're remote. So it's you, Nikki, and Lorna talking. Can you tell me a little bit more about what sort of things you cover?
Yeah, absolutely. Lorna sent out some slides on a PowerPoint before each session, which was really good to see it all visually. We'd sort of start out having a chat. Lorna and Nikki were excellent at making me feel really at ease. As I said, I was quite nervous approaching the group in the first place, feeling a bit alone, not knowing what was going to happen. So they were very good at even though it was virtual, it didn't feel like they were far away. You know, they still felt like there was a connection there. And so she broke down. It was really, for me, a lot of the information was new. I didn't really know that much about ADHD. And I would tend to more Google things Thomas was doing and it would never quite match up. So to demystify Thomas and have this concrete information that, yes, you can attribute this behaviour to the ADHD was really helpful. And so specific things from sort of what can be taken as a personality trait actually is just very common in ADHD, sort of, you know, it can be aggression, unpleasantness, disdainfulness, all those things are wrapped up in it. We looked at sort of how their brains are actually scientifically proven to be different to neurotypical brains, which isn't really something I knew. Again, Nikki touched on there's sort of a stigma around ADHD, and I think up until, I don't really know, I can't put a date on how long ago, a lot of doctors and teachers didn't really believe it existed. And as Nikki said, it's more a product of bad parenting. So to have the confidence that, no, this is a scientific fact, that this is a condition, it's medically proven, rather than sort of skirting around the issue of, oh, he's got ADHD, I'd kind of be more confident in saying this is scientific. And that was one of the things that was covered in the sessions that was really helpful to me. Like, it gave me the confidence to say he's got it and know it's a medical condition.
So dwelling on the stigma thing for a second, so prior to you both learning about ADHD, what would your impressions have been had you witnessed, you know, another parent with a child who displayed ADHD type behaviours?
Do you want me to go first? I will hold up my hands and say I was very judgmental before I had children of sort of hyperactive kids. They're not my favourite type of children. I'm laid back person, and I find these children quite stressful. And I would absolutely have said, yes, that's a product of parenting. I was so misinformed, and I'll completely hold my hands up and say that.
I mean, that's not, you know, uncommon. It's not, you know, yeah, if you don't have the information, right, you can't be blamed for what you don't know.
Yeah.
What about you, Nikki?
Oh, I was completely the same. I think I knew about ADHD. I went to school with somebody that had ADHD, and I remember my parents saying, oh, it's just bad behaviour, he's just so badly behaved, he just needs a good scalp. And when my son was younger, before we had a diagnosis of ADHD, that was how it was kind of put to me as well. It's your parenting, he's just playing up because you're letting him do that. And I think, yeah, you do, if you see other kids out in the street and they're playing up, you kind of instantly think, oh, they're just at it. You don't realise that there's so much more behind their behaviours.
What, Nikki, I'm going to stay with you for a second, Alice. What did you get from your own time with the group that you wish other parents could know straight away?
Education's probably my main thing. Completely understanding the ins and outs of his condition really, really helped. Learning how different sensory things affect your child, learning everything about how his brain works, how he sees it, how he can't process things, being able to then say, oh, we need to break things down into smaller tasks for you rather than bombarding you with information. And that makes your home life a lot easier. Speaking to other parents who have had children at the stage that I was at and what their experiences of it were, and speaking to yourself, Callum, as a somebody that was able to give you an insight into how you feel as an ADHD person. And one of the things that you actually said to me was taking ownership that you have ADHD and just accepting that you have ADHD was a big thing for us with Connor, because at the beginning he felt as if there was something really, really wrong with him, that he was completely different to the rest of his friends and things. And once we kind of got him to accept his ADHD and see the benefits and the positives of it, it completely changed his whole outcome on it.
Yeah, no, I'm a big believer in that being kind of really a really important first step, is almost the philosophy of it, you know, coming to terms with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I guess what I'm trying to capture here is that I feel that for a lot of people, maybe the learning about something would be seen as a passive thing. So to learn about something, how does the learning about something translate into practical benefits? I know you've talked a little bit about breaking things down into different tasks. What about perhaps understanding some of the underlying causes for certain mystifying behaviours?
Do you mean like the way they do things?
Yeah. So
or the way they think about things?
I suppose I don't know. I guess I was sort of leading the answer there a little bit, but what I mean is there will have been behaviours presumably previous to you learning more about ADHD that were completely perplexing, that just didn't make sense. No? Or maybe that's something that would resonate more with Claire.
Are you meaning things like running off in shops and you can't take them anywhere without them climbing up every lamppost and on top of bus shelters?
Yeah.
And things like that, where you kind of learn that they're looking for that sensory input that they have no, they can't see the bigger picture. They only see what's happening in the now. They think, oh, I want to get to the top of that lamppost, but they have no idea the danger that they're putting themselves in.
Claire, how has your relationship with your kid changed since, if at all, since doing these sessions?
I think the education of it and understanding more has made me a lot more patient, which I would often, through a desire for him to just stop doing whatever it was he was doing, I was very... We're not big on punishment in our house, but we try to give sort of logical consequences for things. And it just doesn't work for him. He hasn't processed this as a consequence, sort of like he was getting up really, really early and waking everyone up in the house. So our logical consequence was that he couldn't stay up late at night. Now, that consequence happens far too far away from the infraction, if you know what I mean. So to him, it's not logical. Like he it makes no sense to him. And I'm trying to understand that he's not doing that because he's trying to annoy us. I think I used to often think, are you trying to annoy me? This would go through my head a lot. And I think I've come to peace a lot more. What he's doing is normal within the parameters of ADHD. And that's, it's not an I'll get out of jail free card. It's not an excuse, but it makes me a lot more patient.
How else has your have your parenting strategies changed since doing the sessions? What kind of things have you picked up that you found have helped?
Well, Nikki had a fantastic solution for coming up with a word that Thomas can say when he's feeling really anxious. Thomas would use unusual words to describe how he's feeling. He would often tell us he felt fizzy or fuzzy, and the two are very different. If he feels fizzy, he feels like he's about to explode with anxiety. So he's got a word for when he's feeling very, very, very fizzy. And so, like, he, as Nikki suggested, can come up with it himself, make it a bit silly, make it a bit fun, something we can all laugh at, that can kind of almost diffuse things before he starts screaming. And so encouraging him to try and communicate with us before it gets to the screaming untouchable phase. Because once he's in the screaming phase, you really can't, you can't communicate with him anymore. So Nikki had that great solution of trying to get him to talk to us before he reaches that stage. So that was a really great one. And use of timers again, we used to use them when he was younger and we'd kind of stopped, but because he's at home so much, his routine is very much in the house. So use of timers can be really, really useful just to signal the end of one thing and the start of something else. And I'm quite guilty when he's having a good phase, because he's so verbally competent, I kind of forget how primitive his processing skills are. They're completely at odds, his sort of academic and processing skills with his verbal skills. And I'm guilty of forgetting that he needs things basic. So things like visual cues, like timers, other things like using signs. So I've got a be kind sign it stops me having a million times a day to stop him saying horrible things to his brother. I can hold up the sign. He also has a sign on his brother's door with a big stop sign that he has made himself to remind him not to go in there at 4 a.m. and wake him up. So things like that, simple visual cues, and some great tips from Nikki, someone who's been there, and it makes me feel like less of a lunatic for doing these things.
No, I think that would be a lot. That would be really helpful for other parents to listen to, actually, to be honest. Some of that stuff was actually, I'd not heard before. I'd not heard the stop sign before. That's an interesting one. The use of a word so was it a single word?
Yeah.
That would just express being overwhelmed.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think Nikki's was fabulous. What did Connor come up with, Nikki?
Oh, it was something crazy. It was like tutti frutti wolves or something like that. It's supposed to be like a word that just we can say it to Connor if we think he's getting a bit too much, or he can say it to us when he's really, really not coping. And it's kind of like a stupid funny word that just kind of stops you in your tracks and makes you take a wee second and breathe and things like that. And he can go, right, I need to either walk away or let me just give my mum a hug and let me calm down and things.
It just sort of diffuses things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Nikki, you spoke a little bit to me previously about how you felt quite nervous contacting the group in the first place.
Yeah.
Could you maybe speak a little bit about that?
Yeah, I was very nervous. It was kind of brought to me by my parents that it was all my parent and there was nothing wrong with Connor. And you get yourself into a state where you believe that you're kind of making this all up, that your child's doing all these different things. And I was so nervous about talking to the ADHD group and for somebody to turn around and say, do you know what, no, it is your parent and it's Connor's absolutely fine. And eventually I turned up at the ADHD headquarters one day. I had no idea if I was even in the right place. And I met Lorna and I met Juliet and I just sat down and broke my heart to them about what I was going through and what I had going on with this little boy. And every time they would say to me, that's completely what a child with ADHD would do, it brought more and more relief. And then it was, why don't you come along to the drop-in and meet other parents? And I went, right, okay. And I remember walking away from the first drop-in in floods of tears, but it was out of relief that there were other parents that were experiencing what I was going through with their children. And then we started doing training with the group as well. And again, you go, oh, that's why they're doing this. All right, that makes more sense. And it kind of makes you more confident because I think when you go into the schools and you're speaking to the teachers, I think you can feel really, really judged. And I was very, very unconfident about speaking to teachers and saying, I'm not sure that works for Connor, or I'm not sure Connor won't cope with that. And now I'm in a completely different frame of mind. I know my son better than anybody knows him, and I can say what works for him and what doesn't work for him. And that has got so much to do with the support that I got from the group, and even down to the little things like Lorna teaching you how to word meetings and how to approach things with the schools, what wording to use, you know, how to keep yourself calm when you go into these meetings. Because as much as I am really, really calm when and I talk to Claire and things, when it's your own child that's coming home and they're screaming at you all the time and you're so tired and they're going through a lot and you're trying to support them, you don't always think clearly. And so it's nice to have somebody there to say, right, just hold on, take a wee breath. This is how we're going to help you work through this.
I can immediately see why Lorna picked you, Nikki, as the parent mentor. Yeah, yeah.
I think one of the things before I joined the group, I felt very lonely in all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we've only connected virtually, but it's the benefit's still been massive to know that you're not the only people out there. And to see Nikki that stage further on and talk to her has been so... It just kind of takes a weight off your shoulders a bit, because you can, especially in lockdown, we can get very obsessed with everything Thomas is doing, and because it's so immediate, it's in front of you all the time, you're not getting a break. So it's really good to sort of step back and see that, you know, life will go on, it'll change, but it'll get better, you know, and we'll understand him more as he gets older.
I wanted to ask you, Nikki, because yours is older than Claire's, what are your hopes for Connor in the future?
I just want Connor to be himself. I want him to be confident in himself and confident in his own abilities. Connor's ADHD gives him a way of thinking that I would love to be able to understand, and I'd like him to be able to work on the positives and not the negatives, the things that he can't do. I mean, there's certain things that Connor completely and utterly baffles me that he can do when it comes to computer skills and anything technological, but he struggles with fractions and simple spellings. So I just want Connor to be confident in doing the things that he enjoys doing and not worry so much about all the negative stuff. It says he's going into high school now and there's going to be loads of opportunities for him to try new things and have new experiences. And I just want him to feel confident in doing that and not constantly worrying, I'm not going to be able to do this, or what are other people going to think about me?
And what about you, Claire, for Thomas?
I've always said since he was younger, I want him to be happy. He has spent most of his childhood very unhappy, which has been a source of great anxiety for all of us, his whole family. I feel a great sadness for him that he can't just be a happy child. I watch his four-year-old brother, who's just, I mean, he's a mental four-year-old boy, but he's happy. I'm from quite a happy family. We're all quite laid back and happy, and he's just a ball of anxiety a lot of the time. And that's my main hope for him, is that he's happy and can look back hopefully on a happy childhood. I mean, within that, there's a million other things. I really would, at the moment we're at a phase where I don't think he'll ever be able to write, and I would love that to happen. But I have every confidence it will. He consistently surprises me in his abilities. He doesn't go about things in the normal way, but that's fine. He'll be okay.
He ploughs his own furrow, as they say.
Yeah, definitely. It's never the easy route, but he gets there. And Nikki talks about the way that they think. I have real hope for him that he can harness some of his creativity and his out-of-the-box thinking, because coupled with his scarily good memory for things, I'm really impressed with some of the things he comes out with. Actually, one of the things we're doing together is we're writing a short story, and he'll just occasionally come out with a line of it. Sitting down with Thomas to do work with him is really unpleasant, but he'll just occasionally come out with something to do with the dinosaur story we're writing, and I'll just put it in my phone and we're writing this story together. And it's been, I'm trying to teach him that we don't have to do this sat down at a table. You know, we're going to write this short story to give to his teacher at the end of his term, and this is how we're going to do it. So I hope he can find ways around the things that he can't do.
Claire, put yourself in the shoes of yourself, let's say 2 years ago. You have 30 seconds to speak to yourself. What do you say? What do you prioritize?
Oh, goodness. Try not to worry. Please try not to worry and project doom. It's really hard when you're in a pit of despair, but it will be okay. You'll find ways around it. Try not to worry and just be as patient as you can.
Nikki, what do you think? To sign off, what do you think that ADHD brings to the world?
Oh, it's an amazing thing. I love living in what I call the corner ADHD bubble. He's got such an imaginative way of thinking about things, and I just love it. He's so entertaining and he's so intelligent and he comes up with the most amazing ideas. And I just love living in that little bubble sometimes. I think if everybody just thought outside the box a little bit more the way they do, the world would maybe be a bit of a happier place.
Absolutely. Okay, right. Thank you very much for doing that. I really appreciate that. Have a nice weekend.
Thanks.
Bye.